Welcome again to KROV Oroville 91.1 FM Community Radio. Also heard on the internet at krov.fm. We're at 2360 Oro Quincy Highway. And it's a Tuesday morning at 11. And this is our town. And today's special guest, Nancy Brower from the Butte County Historical Society. That's a big, long title. Very important, and it encompasses a whole lot. So tell us a little bit about you or it or how you got started with it. Anything you can give us as an idea about getting familiar with, first, I would think, the physical location nearby.
Okay. We actually have several locations. Our headquarters, as far as the government is concerned, is the Eamon Home, which was our first building that we own, and it's in Oroville at the corner of Lincoln and Robinson Street, kind of catacorner from the post office in that same block, but across the street. And that actually has an interesting history, because it was the house was built in 1911 by the Eamon family of Eamon Olive fame, and then after the family moved to the Bay Area, it was eventually purchased by the county and used as office buildings. And they had anticipated, when they built their new office building out at County Center, that the building would be torn down and paved over for a parking lot, to paraphrase Joni Mitchell. And however, a lot of the citizens of Oroville took umbrage at that, and there was a big protest. And so the county said, well, they would auction it off. Well, at the time, Senator Ray Johnson was the state representative for this area, and he had actually been born and raised in Oroville, though as an adult he lived in Chico. And so he had a bill passed through the California, sponsored a bill through the California legislature that allowed government agencies to sell their buildings to nonprofits for the proverbial dollar. And this was actually, the Eamon Home was the very first building in California that was had its title transferred in that manner. We actually have a framed copy of the legislation up on the wall. And then they used it as a museum, and they had a rented quarters out at Butte College that they used for the archives. But Butte College wanted the space back, plus the building was not heated in the winter and not cooled in the summer. And I really think there should be, bowing before the people who suffered through those hideous conditions out there. Plus, that's not good for the artifacts either. They really need to be kept in a climate where the temperature does not vary that much at any time of the year. So at that time, the Christian Science Church had had a decrease in their congregation, and they wished to sell their buildings at the corner of Spencer and Baldwin. And so the society bought the building that had been the church, has been transformed into a museum, and then the Sunday school building behind it is the archives. And like the Eamon Home, the society put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into remodeling it for their purposes. And over the course of time, the old Bangor Church, which was built in the 1870s, I think 1872, was donated to the society. The Oregon City School, which was built, I think, in 1876, was donated to the society. So we own those four buildings. And we also are currently leasing some space from the city of Chico in the old municipal building. However, the city is significantly raising the rent, and I think they want to use the space for their own purposes. So we'll probably be out of there soon, and it's unknown at this point whether or not we'll find another place in Chico. But it keeps us busy trying to maintain all of these buildings, some of which are, well, all except for the museum and archives, are over 100 years old. And if anybody's ever lived in an old house, they require a lot of maintenance.
It's very interesting that the Historical Society has such a history. That's really kind of a thing that the average person might not know. You might go by Spencer and Baldwin, you might look up and say, that's pretty, pretty fancy looking place. That's pretty neat. And wow, that's great. I really think that folks probably wouldn't have a clue. And the other thing, too, people have a tendency to go to someplace. They'll see an exhibit. They'll see things. don't have any idea what's behind that. Things don't just happen. They aren't just labeled. They aren't just categorized. You know, they aren't chosen necessarily by themselves. So there's a lot of backup. Let's start practically. Contact information, let's say the hours and any phone number that we can get out for folks.
Okay, the museum is open on Friday mornings from 9 to 12 and on Saturdays from 11 to 3. And the archives for doing research are open on Thursdays and Fridays from 9 to noon. And both of those buildings, we have a joint phone number, and it's 533-9418. 533-9418. And the Eamon Home is open on Saturdays from 11 to 3 for tours. And we also have various functions there. In fact, we had a tea just this past weekend. And the number there is 533-5316. 533-5316.
All right. And when you mentioned archives, does that mean the public has actual access to them?
If they come in, we have, you know, I work there and so do other people. And people come in and we try to ascertain what exactly they're looking for. That sounds like a simple question, but after 40 years as a librarian, I can tell you that that's not a simple question. And there are no simple answers to what is it you're looking for. And so we then consult our databases and our own personal brain databases and you know, bring out information for them to look at. We don't allow them to, you know, go into, you know, sort through the materials.
Sure,
themselves.
Sure. I can see that. It's just like any place where you have such a variety of information there, and then you don't know it's going to be put back in the proper place, which very easily can happen to anyone, no matter how conscientious. You look at this, and oh, you look at that, oh, that's interesting, and then that's really quite a deal. And it is so impressive to me that there's so much available. I get a bulletin. That's another thing. I get a bulletin from the society. And of course, I'm always amazed because I wasn't around then. But beyond that, it's really always something of interest. And folks are still delving into that, I'm sure.
That's true. Actually, all those years that I was a librarian working in Oroville, I was always trying to get people to write up the history of this area because it has a fascinating history. And if it doesn't get written up, it's going to be lost. And, you know, things get disintegrated. I mean, a lot of our you know, materials are very fragile and we, you know, encase them in Mylar and do things to preserve them. But, I mean, I can't tell you how many times we've had people bring in things that were found. People used any kind of paper, newspapers or whatever, as like insulation in the walls. I mean, they didn't have fiberglass once upon a time. And you know, things have been stored in garages or in sheds. And so those things disintegrate. They get wet. We've had a few things that have come in that have been singed from a garage fire or whatever. And so if people don't write things up, then you know, they're going to be lost. But over the last, I'd say, 5 or so years, we've just had an explosion of people writing really fascinating books about the area. Some people may be familiar with the Arcadia Press book on the building of the Oroville Dam that was written by Larry Matthews. And he has a new book coming out later this year called The Lost Cities of Butte County. And it's, with the exception of Feather Falls, they're all towns that are now under the lake, but he did include Feather Falls because it doesn't exist anymore, and there was actually a lot of great material. And we've had somebody write about the early history of Bidwell Bar, and now he's got a second book that we trying to find a publisher for that we can get to press here pretty soon. And there's been all kinds of interesting books written, and we have them available in our bookstore. But people are just fascinated by, you know, the history of the county. And it is a fascinating history. People go, oh, Butte County. But Butte County for a long time was the largest city north of Sacramento, between here and the Oregon border. And there were a lot of, you know, had a vibrant Chinese community. And there were a lot of, besides the gold, this is, you know, a huge agricultural area. There's, you know, a U.S. plant introduction garden that still exists in the Chico area. All kinds of fascinating things.
Yeah, it's really, the more time I spend here, the more I come to agree with what you're saying, people I meet. And it's an unknown future, but some ways the past is just about as unknown to most of us. It's almost like they're you know, we live where we are and how we are. Fundraising events. Let's start with, again, I'm backtracking, but the society. So let's say someone, well, I guess you'd call the number if you wanted to either get a bulletin or maybe join or something like that. In other words, to get in the cycle, what I did was get into the society and then get their publications. So how does somebody that might hear this think about being able to be on their mailing list and being heard from?
Okay, we actually have a website. It's www.ButteCountyHistoricalSociety, I know, real mouthful, .org. And there's a membership form that's available through there. We post a copy of Slickens, which is our newsletter, on that site. And there's also a list of the table of contents for all the issues of Diggins, which is our quarterly journal there. And we do have a complete, you know, back file of them, and we actually sell a lot of back issues when people come in looking for information and they find that there either was, you know, an entire issue devoted to it or a significant amount of information. Lots of times people buy the back copies. Memberships are $25, a family is $35, a senior is $20, and a senior family is $30. And then we have $50 and $100 supporting and sustaining memberships. And there's a membership form there. You can come into any of our buildings, and we have a brochure about the society, and we have forms available there. Interested visitors are welcome to take a copy of our latest newsletter with them, and we have programs not every month, but most of the months of the year. We also have fundraising things. We had a tea just this past Saturday. We were supposed to have a Sutter Buttes hike on Sunday, but it got a little rained out by the weather, but we're hoping to reschedule that. And anyway, we just have various, you know, programs during the year. On May 1st, Tom Crisp, who recently wrote a book about the Sacramento Valley baseball teams in the mid-1910s, is going to come and speak, and he is knowledgeable about the Oroville Olives and the Trolley League. He was a longtime sports coach for Winters High School. It was in the Davis area, I think it was Winters. And we advertise our events in the paper as well as through our Slickens.
Yeah, so folks, maybe they have to be partly alerted, partly have a mind to have an interest, but on the other hand, if they read enough things or talk to enough people, they're going to get a chance to decide and to know that the society's there. It's waiting to tell you things. And yeah, I was going to ask you about fundraisers. Well, that's all that real estate's scary as far as maintaining it. you know, it's cold. Well, how are we going to heat it? It's warm. How are we going to cool it? How are we going to control the humidity? That's not a small task. And I'm sure a lot of your activity has to be gauged toward just maintenance.
Paying the PG&E bill.
Paying the bills, yeah. And you kind of talked about some things that fit along this thought, too. And that is soliciting materials. I guess maybe sometimes people are moving and they find some box of something that their grandfather left behind or something. I mean, you don't have a sort of an active Bring Us Your Stuff campaign, do you? Or just does it sort of happen?
Not really. It just sort of happens, as you say. Sometimes people are cleaning out, a relative's house, or they're downsizing themselves. One thing that we do that I'd like to, make clear is that if you've got sets of old photos that are of interest, either of families from, an earlier era who lived in Butte County, we really only collect items from the Butte County area. We have enough storage issues as it is, but we're interested in anything that really covers the history of Butte County. So pictures of old buildings, events, people, preferably ones that what event it had to do with, who the people were. We have lots of photos of people who are not identified, unfortunately. But we will take photos and scan them. A while back, we had a lady came in who was donating a spinning wheel to us that had come across the plains. And I got to talking to her, and it turned out that she was the great-granddaughter of Sam Norris, who Oroville has a community service award that's named after him. He was the first Oroville city engineer, but he came to this area in the early 1900s incognito to survey the route for Western Pacific up the canyon. And the reason why he was incognito is because Western Pacific was trying to get a step ahead of the other competing railroads, and so they didn't want anybody to know that they had somebody out there surveying. But he turned out that he had a wonderful photo album full of pictures that he had taken all around in the mountains in the area, and being a surveyor, he actually had the coordinates, the township and range coordinates, on many of the photos. And so she lent us the album, and we scanned the album, gave her album back, plus a CD with all the photos on it. So it's actually, if you would like to, have digitized photos, and that you can easily share with other family members, and it's also a great way to preserve them. You can have them in various sources and are protected from any kind of loss from fire, flooding, etc. We're happy to do that as long as you're willing to leave them with us for a little while, and then we give you back your album and the photos, so it actually kind of helps us, because we don't really necessarily care if we have the original photos, because they all take up space, whereas electronic storage takes up a minuscule amount of space in comparison. And as long as you're willing to sign off that, we can make them available to researchers, it's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, it's quite a deal, the current ability to manipulate things like that. I can't imagine what it would have been like 50 years ago, even trying to do the same thing that you're doing. Things are so readily available and widespread. It's really marvelous. I wish I was going to put you on the spot about something I read in one of the recent diggings, and now I can't recall it. But that is, to me, as somebody who's still new here, I didn't live here, I wasn't born here, is so, I can't imagine what the right word is, but it sort of ties you in. As a kid, I thought, history, who cares? What date somebody did this, what date? But this isn't memorizing dates for a test or something. To me, it took me just a while to get a real view of what history really is. And it's all about drama, it's about action, it's about people, it's about events. And you folks are just amazing with it. As I said, I really look forward to getting the publications and seeing what's going on. And I think that if you go to the real downtown Oroville, you almost... I don't know, maybe I'm prejudiced, but you almost get a feeling of old-timey, of how things were. Even though it's here in the present, it's sort of, to me, kind of how things were. things, the buildings, and they're there, and you see the construction, some of those old brick buildings. My goodness sakes alive. It's the effort and the precision. Each row of bricks, each one just level and straight and beautiful. And then you go down Montgomery Street and the big old Victorian houses. We've really got a treasure here that you probably aren't looking for when you first come here. But unless your eyes are closed, I don't know how you can miss it.
Well, there's a lot of actually old buildings. The Washington Block building right at the corner of Montgomery and Myers, catacorner from the Eagles, that is being fixed up by Sean and Lori King. That building was built in 1856. It's the oldest commercial building in Oroville. But there's a lot of older buildings in downtown Oroville, and I think it's really wonderful how they're being refurbished and brought back to their earlier glory, just like a lot of the houses downtown. When I first moved to Oroville in 1973, Montgomery Street was not the most attractive street I'd ever driven down. But now, I mean, the houses have really been, most of them been really refurbished. And if you drive around on the other streets on Bird and Robinson and High, there's a lot of houses that have are beautiful now. And because Oroville, prior to the construction of the railroad, which was Western Pacific, 1910, I think, is when the first train went up the canyon. Oroville was all between the river and where the railroad tracks are. You know, going up further, that area wasn't built, and what's now Southside was really basically a separate community called Oro Vista. So there were a lot of little towns around, and you look at the names and you think, where were those towns? And then you look them up and you find out that they really were all where Oroville is now. But when you figure that people either were walking or riding a horse or a buggy,
yes,
they were a greater distance than, you know, something that you might drive in 2 minutes in your car maybe took you 20 or 30 minutes, depending on whether you were walking or riding in a buggy.
And I guess, again, mining certainly had to be a very big part of the support for people, the economic support.
Yeah, in the early days, but it's surprising how quickly a lot of that died down. You know, at one time there were something like 100,000 people who lived in Oroville. I know, it's kind of boggles the imagination. Well, up at Yankee Hill, Spanish Town, that had like, but it was so quixotic. People were here, and then it would start to peter out, and there would be rumors of a strike somewhere else, and people, you'd have a bustling town one day and practically a ghost town the next. I mean, that happened in Spanish Town. Here, people stayed around, and yes, they did continue to get money from mining. But as somebody pointed out to me once, that it in the bigger ventures like McLaughlin's Wall, people like McLaughlin and his big investors made money, but everybody else kind of lost their shirt over that one. So there were a lot of get-rich-quick schemes with mining that really, not that many people made a lot of money. If you look at the big four like Crocker and Huntington and Stanford, and I forget who the fourth one was, but they, you know, they made their money by being shopkeepers, because that's really where the money was, providing supplies to the miners.
Yes, I remember reading about Sutter, and they talk about the gold and this and that, and then I read just what you said. He made a fortune supplying the people with their needs, because they come running out here, no stores, no place to buy supplies and so on. So that's where it came from. And I still see those things. I'd like to know more about the history of those. When you go down, I guess they call it the Dredger Flats or something.
Oh.
Go down Highway 70, and there's big, just looks like the earth has been scoured, and then there's nothing there. Even though the vegetation is covering it up, it's quite visible still.
Yeah, dredger tailings are what they're called. And actually, you know, that's what the fill at Oroville Dam is. It's actually they built a little railway, and that's what they did, was they hauled the dredger tailings up to the dam and filled the dam with it. I mean, they had all this rock, and there still is an amazing amount of rock. It's hard to think about how much more rock there was before they did that. But it's that they're actually so extensive that they appear on the USGS quadrangle maps for this area.
You mean the elevation of these things?
Well, yeah, and they're actually marked, you know, dredger tailings. Yeah,
yeah,
because they're so extensive. But and they were a lot more visible, I understand, in the early days. My husband's uncle, who came here as a six-year-old in 1927, said that, you know, like where Baldwin, where the Ark Museum and Archives are, he said he remembers when he was even, you know, when he was a young boy, maybe even to his early teens, when that was all dredger tailings. I think that road was put through in the early 30s. The sidewalks and curbs are stamped with WPA markings. So
yeah,
that was after 1933.
Yeah. Well, what a fascinating place to live and to be, and so nice. By the way, I'm belatedly repeating what I should have repeated. Nancy Brower is our guest from the Butte County Historical Society here in Oroville. And listen back to this, by the way. We're recording this, and you can listen back to this if you've tuned in late and get some information about what the society is doing and their hours. One of the common things I always like to repeat is a website, which is certainly a good introduction, www.buttecountyhistoricalsociety.org. And the phone number for contact, 533-9418. And certainly, you mentioned, you know, your fundraisers and people joining and families joining, but it's not a thing that comes screaming out at you over the radio or the TV, join this, do this, send money here. So it can't be easy for you guys.
No, but it's, you know, people come in. Sometimes I've had people write from other areas asking for us to do some research, and then they end up joining. It's amazing how many members we have who live outside this local area, and people come to our events. We have every year in June we have a big olive festival to celebrate the fact that olives, not just mining, but olives were a big part of the financial economic picture of Oroville. Frida Eamon was running $1 million olive company in the early 1900s, and when you think about $1 million then, what that translates to now.
Yeah,
it was a significant part of the economy. And they're, you know, they still can olives here. It's now owned by DeLillo, but they can olives under the Eamon label for us to sell.
Oh, how neat.
Yeah. And people, you know, people say, you know, there's a lot of people who maintain that those are the best olives around, and they will come and buy a whole case of them at holiday time in particular, but even at other times of the year. We have them year-round. But people come to that. Actually, that will be on, I think it's June 18th. It's the third Saturday in June. So there'll be lots of advertisement for it. So mark your calendars. We're planning on making it bigger and better this year. And we have, you know, the olive oil vendors from around the local area and other kind of associated ones. We sell food, and it's a fun day.
Okay, that's the Olive Festival. Is that the official title?
Yes, yes.
Okay, and what are we missing here? Anything at all? It seems like we're talking over something that would take forever to get familiar with. If you started delving into the things that are available, it's just really quite nice.
If you're really interested in history, we're always looking for volunteers to work in the archives or to be docents in the museum or assist at the Eamon home. And we train people. You don't have to, you know everything about Butte County history. I don't know everything about Butte County history for sure. I don't think any of us do. But the idea is we have, you know, we do training, and I started working in the archives in, I think, May of 2007, shortly after I retired, and I can't tell you how much I've learned about Butte County history in the time that I have worked there, and I, you know, I find it continually fascinating. But if you're interested in, you know, in possibly being a docent or working in the archives, all you have to do is contact us or stop by, and said we're happy to provide training, and we can always use more people.
Yeah, it just occurred to me when I think back how much I was not interested in history as a kid and in school. It would just seem so foreign. It seems so unreal. But if you can be in an area and your history isn't some war in Europe, it's right here, right where you are. Things you can see today. Boy, that comes alive. I know they don't have such a thing. They should. Maybe they do. It's a part of the curriculum in some of the elementary schools or junior highs or high schools here today. Would it even be possible that there would ever be a part of the curriculum that might deal with this?
They actually do teach local history in third and fourth grades.
Good.
So, you know, how much they go into it depends on the teachers. And I know there's a teacher out in Thermalito who every year seems to assign for extra credit writing about the old Thermalito Oddfellows Hall. And there may be other topics. So that's just the one that I know that he signs in. We actually have a young man who's still in high school who comes and volunteers at the Eamon home, and that's how he got interested, was by doing research on the old Oddfellows Hall for a school report. So, you know, it sometimes it's just one little thing. I'm continually amazed by how many people who still live around here whose families were here during the Gold Rush era. And it's actually quite amazing how many there are.
Boy, that's a real handle on getting a hold of information from back then. That's really close on. It's not like some gossip thing that somebody might have heard or made up. It's actually people who were here, whose families. That's wonderful to have those threads back to the past.
Well, every time people try to say, oh, you know, this has never happened before, I can tell you that those of us who read the old newspapers can tell you that there really isn't anything new under the sun. Perhaps the methods by which some things are done and whatever have changed, but people have and always will be people with their good points and their bad points. And it's truly amazing when you think, oh, you know, this kind of stuff didn't used to happen, both good and bad. And then you read some of the old newspapers, and then you go, well, maybe they did they did happen. And one thing that I think that maybe we miss now that I saw a lot of in the early papers were celebrations for things, because there wasn't television, there wasn't radio,
right,
and there definitely weren't computers. And so people went out, and the trains went everywhere. And between all these little towns, even in the 1880s, you could get on the train in Oroville and be in San Francisco by early afternoon. And people would go, you know, take the train from here to Chico, here to Gridley. And that's one of the big successes behind the trolley league, the baseball leagues in the 1910s and 20s, where people just hopped on the train. They had special excursion rates for going to baseball games. And there were touring music groups, drama groups. There were all kinds of festivals. There was a huge water festival that used to be held out on the river, and they had the Orange and Olive Exposition. That the municipal auditorium was built for the Orange and Olive Exposition. And the governor came up from Sacramento on the train, and they had huge fanciful displays that were created out of olives and citrus fruit and whatever, and all the little communities, Palermo, Thermalito, they all had their own exhibits that they created touting the wonders of their specific area.
Sure.
And, you know, people, the Thermalito was originally a land colony, and it, you know, they promoted it as a fabulous place for growing citrus. And both Durham and Gridley were also land colonies, though those weren't, you know, they weren't promoting citrus there. But this is as, Oroville's as far north in California as citrus is commercially grown.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, there's all kinds of interesting things about, you know, what happened here and why some of the development happened the way it did.
Yeah, I think we're all kind of too busy living to see.
Yeah, that can happen. Yeah. But people come in and they bought an old house and they're looking for information. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we can help them, sometimes we can't. It just depends. And but there's, you know, I don't know. It's just sometimes you just need to get out and walk and look around, and you can see things differently than when you drive in a car.
Yeah, I live up, of course, in a Cherokee area, and they have this little museum up there. And President Hayes days, I mean, the president actually came to Nowhere, USA, for some reason or other, many, many years ago, obviously when he was president. And so there are so many events, but it is hard to keep them in the mind of people. So having the facilities that you have and the archives and the ease with which people can learn historical things. To think that you can actually walk in a building and maybe you've got some idea or something you're interested in, or maybe you don't. Maybe you walk in and say, I want to know something about history, and then whoever's there at the time might ask the person a little bit to get some idea of what they're thinking about. And the next thing you know, they're looking at it right there.
Yeah.
These newspapers. Were newspapers traditionally archived in toto, the whole thing? And if it was this done, I assume, by the papers themselves that kept these records? Or
actually, it's pretty amazing. There are some gaps, but it's pretty amazing how many newspapers there are. The first newspaper published in Butte County was the Butte Record, and it was started at Bidwell Bar, which was the county seat at the time, in late 1853, I believe, September. But so it's actually amazing that they lasted as long as they survived, as long as they did, because the first libraries in Butte County, the public ones, weren't started until after 1900. There were a couple of like reading room. There was a reading room in Chico, and there was a ladies library that was run out of the courthouse in Oroville. But the Oroville City Library was founded in 1906, and I think the city library in Chico, and then nobody really had any decent buildings until the Carnegie grants came along, and buildings were built in the late 19, you know, just before 1910 up until about the middle of the next decade, were when all the Carnegie libraries were built in Oroville, Chico, Gridley, and Biggs. But somehow they managed to save all those papers, and starting in the early 1850s, the Butte County Library started having the papers microfilmed. They were still microfilming them when I came in 73.
Wow.
The Butte Record was the first one. Then the North Californian was in Oroville for a short while. Then Butte Record moved to Chico. And the Butte County Register was started in Biggs by William Sharkey, and then it was bought over by Seth Boynton and run in Oroville. And then in the late 1920s, the Oroville Mercury and the Oroville Register merged. And but there's, you know, a long history of newspapers in Butte County, and the library has most of them on microfilm.
Yeah, I get the feeling that newspapers are, unfortunately nowadays, in a trend of disappearing rather than multiplying, it seems like.
Unfortunately.
That's a real shame.
You know, it's interesting because due to the way that paper is manufactured, prior to about 1900, most newsprint was made out of rag. It was rag paper. And then the trend started toward using wood pulp, which is very acidic and does not last nearly as well. I have seen papers from the 1880s that look like they just came off of the press.
Oh, my.
And then you can see newspapers from last week, if they're left exposed to the sunlight, have turned very yellow. So
yeah.
It's that's the difference in the type of paper. We have some, they use this wonderful blue lined paper for legal documents. They did all through the 1850s, and I know it lasted for quite a while after that. That paper is the most wonderful paper. We actually have the original petition that was signed by people, including people in Plumas County, because that was part of Plumas County was incorporated into Butte County still at that time, asking for the bridge to be built at Bidwell Bar. And you can still read all, I mean, the paper is in great shape. We have a contract that was signed by John Bidwell in the mid-1850s. And they're just in fabulous condition. I also work one morning a week out at the Hall of Records, and they've got some of that wonderful blue court legal paper, too. And it's amazing how well that's held up.
Well, that's quite an example of how, in quote, modern technology.
Maybe it wasn't so great after all.
Maybe it didn't hold up. Maybe they left something behind that is very valuable. Again, folks, we have Nancy Brower here on Our Town, KROV Oroville, 91.1 FM and KROV.FM on the World Wide Web. Nancy from the Butte County Historical Society. Their phone, 533-9418. And we do have the website, ButteCountyHistoricalSociety.org. That's an easy one to remember if you're seeking more information. Yeah, and to me, I still think of Spencer and Baldwin as being the place. I've only been there a few times, but at least that's a quick and easy one to find, and it's right there. And it's a good presence, and you can get in touch with so much. And you don't have to obviously go in there with a preconceived idea of I'm looking for this, although I guess that's good too. But I'm sure a lot of people say, I wonder what's in there.
Yeah, and we have people every week come in and say, I've always wondered what's in here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what's in there is a lot of information. Okay, Nancy, anything else you want to add? Anything we're missing? I could listen to you for a long time. That's for sure, but you aren't obligated to keep going if you feel like you've covered what you kind of want to say.
No, just that, you know, we're a friendly group and we're always looking for, you know, be like people to come visit if you're interested in working there. I have had a lot of people say, when I retire, I'm going to come down here and work, but they're still working, and said we can always use volunteers. We're in the process of redoing many of our exhibits. We can use people who are interested in carpentry and who'd be, you know, like to help with construction of exhibit cases, or people with an artistic bent who would like to help mount pictures, and there's just, you know, we have plenty of things to do to, you know, to match up with people's skills and interests, and it said it's a great way to learn about the history of the area. If you're interested in purchasing books or back issues of Slickens, we have them indexed, Slickens indexed, and we have lots of books on the local area in our museum store. We have some things at the Eamon Home, but the museum store has the biggest selection. And if you have something that you would like to research, you can come in and we'll see what we can do to help you. And anyway, we're here for the people of Butte County. Our mission is to preserve and make available the history of Butte County, and we do it to the best of our ability.
Yeah, and it sounds like the more you learn about Butte County, the more you appreciate what's really happened here.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, we'll let you go on your day and make history for yourself.
Okay.
Thanks again to Nancy Brower from Butte County Historical Society for coming over here today and informing us about what happens here.